Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and give us some feedback. Also, the Bald-Faced Truth podcast, it's brought to you by Shoe Mill, my favorite shoe store with locations in Portland and Salem and online at shoemill.com. Shoe Mill, where we put the world at your feet.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
So much to talk about with our next guest. If you have any connection to Southern California sports, you know Lee Hacksaw Hamilton, sportscaster, radio talk show host, TV, radio, does it all. And this is the voice in San Diego in Southern California, and he's joining us now, Lee Hacksaw Hamilton. Now, Lee, when you see people, do they just yell Hacksaw and come running up to you?
Yeah, sometimes it has a adjective or an adverb on the front of it, but yes. How are you, John? Good to talk to you after all these years.
I know, you too. Hey, you know, I grew up, I had a friend in college who was a diehard Padres fan and Chargers fan. He was from the San Diego area, and it was a, you know, he used to talk about Lee Hacksaw Hamilton and, you know, all this stuff. What, now with the Chargers move to L.A., are people in San Diego still Chargers fans?
There are a lot of NFL fans in San Diego. There are a lot of Charger hater fans in San Diego. This was 55 years of loyalty. I mean, I was the voice of the Chargers for 13 years, and then I became the voice of the Seahawks for a couple of 3 years after that. But the Chargers left behind a legacy, and they left behind a lot of ill will. Everybody, my favorite phrase was, everybody here would root for Philip Rivers to go 16-0 as the Chargers quarterback in L.A., and we're good for Dean Spanos, the owner, to go 0-16. They still get decent TV ratings here, about 50% of what they used to get. They used to get a 30 share on Sunday. The local telecast, because the Charger games are pumped in here, is at about a 15 share. It's tragic what happened. It should have never been allowed to happen. I blame the NFL. I blame Jerry Jones and Robert Kraft, and obviously we blame the owner. You know, I've been here for more than 30 years doing sports talk radio, TV anchor work, and play-by-play, and now I have my own website. But this was the first time that the city and county had really come together to put a package together to build a new stadium. And the Spanos family refused to go to the negotiating table after every component was put in place, land acquisition, city contribution, county contribution, what the NFL would have put in with the G3 fund, what the Spanoses supposedly were to contribute, and they never went to the bargaining table. And then the ballot was voted down. There was so much anger, and he promptly left. And I maintained all along that Spanos, the family, their whole game plan from 3 years prior to that was to move, to leave. They never spent a penny on the stadium. The stadium's crumbling, but they left behind a tremendous legacy, and they went to a market that did not support them. I don't know, John, if you ever saw the first day headlines in the Los Angeles Times, and the columnist when the Chargers moved to Los Angeles was, "We don't want you, go back." And it's been like that. It's been like that for the last 3 years. They played in a tiny soccer stadium that seats 27,000, while the Rams were drawing 62 and 72,000 at the LA Coliseum. The Chargers were playing effectively, John, 16 road games a season, because there were no fans that went to see the Chargers when the Steelers showed up last year. The color of the day was gold and black. When the Raiders showed up, it was silver and black. Color of the day when the Broncos came in was orange. And even Green Bay, guys wearing green and gold, overran the stadium. It's just, it's hideous what the league allowed to happen. It's shameful for what they allowed to occur as it relates to 55 years of loyalty in San Diego. So it's a long answer. Yeah, there are football fans here, and there are a lot of Charger haters here.
Well, I want to know, too, because Justin Herbert, Oregon's quarterback, who a lot of people up here follow and you know, are hopeful that he has a good career, he's walking into the middle of that. It's not his fault, but, you know, it's good to know what he's walking into. Like, a lot of times, Lee, when you see a franchise that does stuff like that, you say, okay, the franchise is dysfunctional. They've got their eye off the ball. Is it a dysfunctional franchise, or do you think the Chargers can be successful in L.A. in a new stadium with a new quarterback?
I think they had a lot of grade A draft. I think getting Justin Herbert was a perfect fit. He fell to them. They really had a good week. I mean, not only did they draft him, they drafted a really good linebacker in the second round. They historically have done well in the third and fourth rounds of the draft. Been very selective in free agency, but normally the guys they get a good year or two out of. The football side of the operation has credibility. I think the general manager, Tom Telesco, is a very bright light. I think Anthony Lynn is a good, demanding coach. But we're walking down the road now of what will be a very different Chargers team. And Justin Herbert, I believe, is probably going to wind up playing about week 8 or week 9 of the season. They're going to start the journeyman, Tyrod Taylor. He's been a soldier. Wherever he's played, he's been a soldier. But he's also 23-21 in his career, and he gets hurt. They ran off Phillip Rivers, who won 123 games and is going to the Pro Football Hall of Fame. But I think Rivers just got tired of the whole atmosphere here. And not many of the guys popped off, but the last game of the season, I saw stuff from Phillip Rivers I had never, ever seen before, because he had been truly loyal. He was a stand-up guy. When he threw 4 touchdowns, he'd tell you. When he threw 4 picks, blame me. He wept at the final players' press conference in Kansas City after the game. And when I saw that, I was of the opinion he is leaving Los Angeles. And then he didn't show up for his exit meeting with the coaches, which is not him because he's a true team guy. And I knew the change was in the offing. So this will be transition. They're facing an issue a year from now because Joey Bosa becomes a free agent, and that's going to be a mega contract to be signed. If Tyrod Taylor does not work out, Justin Herbert is the starter. I think what's fascinating to see is what will happen beginning opening day when they move into the brand-new stadium with the Rams. I mean, the Rams are L.A.'s team. The Chargers are an outlier as it relates to being in the marketplace. I mean, they're rated below Dodgers, Angels, Rams, Lakers, Clippers, probably the Kings and the Ducks, USC and UCLA. I mean, they are so far down the pecking order in terms of fan support. It's sad. It's sad because here we do 65,000 to 72,000 a game for Charger games, and up there they play 16 road games a season because nobody goes to their home games. And now they're going into the beautiful new SoFi Stadium. What the hell's going to happen when there's 21,000 there opening day?
Yeah, what does happen? And Lee, I know that, you know, the Chargers say they're invested, and they're probably looking at the valuation of their franchise, saying, "Hey, we're worth more in L.A. than we are in San Diego." But if this, we've seen things like this fail before. The Raiders go into L.A. We saw the Rams come and go, come back again. If the Chargers are not successful a decade later, is San Diego open arms saying, "Come on home"?
Well, we don't have a new stadium, and that is still at the intersection of this crisis. And we've not been very progressive at getting things done. John, you've been down here. We have a beautiful convention center. When I moved to San Diego to be the voice of the Chargers and do sports talk, they were fighting over, we have to have a convention center, and they couldn't get anything passed. They finally did get it passed in about 1990. But the place is just not progressive. Our big industry, not the military any longer, it's tourism. And we don't have convention facilities, even though they've expanded the thing twice, to be able to handle. Who the hell doesn't want to have a convention in San Diego, especially if you're in Chicago or Providence or wherever in the middle of winter? And it's just been a fight to get anything done. They built a beautiful baseball stadium downtown, Petco Park. They had to fight through 22 lawsuits to finally get that thing built. And now it's a crown jewel and has led to the rebirth of downtown right next door to the convention center. So just not a progressive place, and that's sad. I do believe that the end game of the Spanos family was to move to L.A., drive the value up, and sell the franchise. And they are held in utter disregard in that market, ownership is. Now, I'm not talking football side. I'm talking ownership side, business side, utter disregard up there. Just like they're now held in utter disregard in what was their former home, where they averaged 62,000 fans a game and you couldn't buy a ticket.
Lee Hacksaw Hamilton, the voice of Southern California sports, is with us on the show. You mentioned the baseball park, Major League Baseball. What's going to happen? How soon do they play? Do they get in 82 games? Do the players and owners get on the same page? How's this going to play out, Lee?
Well, I wrote a column yesterday on my website that said what these owners have tried to jam down the players' throats is ridiculous. If these owners want 67% of Mike Trout's contract, Manny Machado's contract, then every executive on the baseball side of the Padre and Dodger and Angel operation should take a 67% pay cut, too. What's right for one should be right for the other. I do believe the games have to be played. Ownership, if we don't have any baseball this year, I could see franchises filing for bankruptcy. I think there's a bunch of franchises, most of them in the small market, that would be in a world of hurt. The players have to play. They need to get paid. You don't want a year of your athletic ability to go by the board, even though the National Hockey League a decade ago sat out an entire season. But they'll come back to a middle ground. I was told early this morning the union will make a counterproposal. They're not taking a bleeping 67% pay cut, I guarantee you that. I think their counterproposal will be prorated pay. You can defer half the prorated pay to give you a little breathing room in 2020 and make up that money in 2021 and 2022. Nobody should think canceling a season, screwing the owners, is a good idea, because I'll tell you what, that all has a huge negative impact on the revenue streams for the next season. And the revenue streams impact the salary cap and the luxury tax and all that. So they'll find some middle ground, but it's kind of nasty right now, John, as we talk on a Thursday. But I would bet a week from today they'll have some formula to get back on the field. But I think it's shameful the owners tried to stick it to the players.
I got a couple minutes, Lee. I want to ask you about UCLA and USC. New athletic directors. How does that affect them? Can they matter again?
Well, USC's Clay Helton's been, I think, been treated really unfairly. I mean, he walked into a bad situation. They've never recovered, in all honesty, from the whole 30 scholarship sanctions, the Reggie Bush, Pete Carroll fiasco. It's taken them forever to get back. But what Helton did with an unbelievably young team and an absolute raw 18-year-old freshman quarterback last season was pretty good. Now they're off and running on a pretty good recruiting year for the next signing period next December. I think they'll be competitive, and I think they'll hang in there as long as they keep that kid quarterback on the field. And the other quarterback, JT Daniels, is having second thoughts about transferring. He may stay, too, because he might get a chance to play again. UCLA, I don't understand what's happened to Chip Kelly. He's not the same coach that we saw, loved, respected, followed at Oregon. He has really struggled. I've been amazed at just his personality and his just his not wanting to be emotionally sold to be a Bruin. He is not part of the community. It's like he's off in his own solar system. And by the way, he's gone 7-17 and had something like 36 players transfer in 2 years. So UCLA's got a new athletic director coming in from Boston College. He's a whirlwind. He's done a lot of things. He came out of Ohio State, Michigan State, and then did a great job in 3 years at BC. So he will try to guide UCLA back. They are hurting financially. I mean, they've lost 50% of their season ticket support. The crowds are down by 30,000 at the Rose Bowl. Who would have ever thought that would have happened? Mike Bone's the new athletic director at USC. He's a grinded out type guy. He was at San Diego State for about 15 minutes and left. didn't do much here, but he went to Cincinnati. He really did a good job resurrecting the Bearcats program. So I think he and Helton are kind of joined philosophically at the hip. So I guess my answer would be give us one more year with the new leadership in place and just see if this thing takes off. This thing should not be where it is right now. It's like what they built at Oregon, starting with Bellotti through everybody else. Oregon should not be down ever, ever again. Now, you know, they've bounced back, and I think Cristobal, because I follow the Pac-12 a great deal, Cristobal's done a really good job up there. So let's see what USC and UCLA are a year from today when you have me back on the air.
I'm going to have you back on before then. You're going to be our Southern California guy. Can we count on you to update us on the Chargers and Herbert and bring you on once in a while?
When the phone rings, I answer it. It might be my kid in Oregon who's a priest. It might be my wife telling me to go get bread and milk, or it might be you asking to come co-host your show.
I love it. Lee, appreciate you, man.
John, appreciate it. You get a chance, check my website, LeeHacksawHamilton.com. I write every day, and I'll guarantee you this. If you read what I write every day, you'll be the second smartest guy in Oregon right after me.
I love it. Lee Hacksaw Hamilton, I want you to leave it here. You got the BFT. Coming up, we got a lot of radio show left. Nick Daschle of the Oregonian will be with us. Maury Brown of Forbes will be with us. We'll talk about the Oakland A's. Are they ripe for the picking? What I mean is MLB to PDX. I don't know if I'm going to put a question mark on that or a punctuation point. You tell me. Stick around. Leave it here.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.